So you see, we're getting now to Turkey. There's a reason I'm sharing all of this. All of this fits the picture. What Putin is saying today is that he wants the Russian land back. Is he right? Is he wrong? Only force will show us. It's going to be by force. Putin is now riding a great wave of popularity among the people of Russia. And I personally have nothing against Putin, but I think Putin will be probably assassinated by one of the oligarchs. Who are the oligarchs in Russia? They're the people who have the billions of dollars. They're the ones who do the business with the West. These people are now hurting by the sanctions. And they're saying, why is Putin doing this? We want to be part of the European Union. Ukraine wants to be part of the European Union. We want to have a better standard of living and more business. And so I draw my first conclusion from this evening regarding the one world government. The one world government is universalist in its ideology. Russia is nationalist. China is nationalist. It used to be communist China. It ain't communist anymore. It's now capitalist China. North Korea, nationalist. Iran, nationalist. And I have news for you. Israel is nationalist. The one world government cannot tolerate nationalist governments. And Russia, I believe, will be brought under control by the one world government one way or another. Okay. Now I want to talk a little bit about the Turks. I started talking about the Tatars. They were in Crimea. About the Circassians. They were in Sochi. And there's another group, Chechens. How many people remember the Chechens? Russia has been killing these people for centuries. And the Chechens have been killing the Russians for centuries. Who's right? They're both right. But the Turks are Muslims, Sunni Muslims, and they will never forget the Russians. And they side with the Ukrainians, because the enemy of my enemy is my ally. Are you with me? Okay, now I'm going to start going to some very crazy stuff. Russia today is 150 million people population. The Soviet Union, from the bad old days of the Cold War, Soviet Union was 350 million people. And today Russia's 150 million people. What happened to the 200 million people? They're in the six stands. Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Azerbaijan. 200 million Turkish Muslims. You see, the Soviet Union was a Muslim country before the breakup in 1989. So Russia today is only 150 million Russians. There is a Christian renaissance today in Russia. Of course, they don't like Pentecostals or Baptists or anyone who's not from the Russian Orthodox Church. But within the mentality of Russian people, the Russian Orthodox Church is having a revival. I was on Radio Moscow in June of 1994. I visited Moscow. And I was interviewed in Russian. I was interviewed in Russian. It took me 4 hours, you know, to prepare the questions and answers in Russian. I read the answers. I said exactly what I meant to say. The Russians were very nice about the interview. And I said to the Russians in 1994, communism is over. America is not your enemy anymore. Europe is not your enemy anymore. And the Jews in Israel, not your enemy anymore. The enemy of Russia has always been Islam. You know Putin? You know what he says? How many people heard Putin say that what made Russia great is its Christianity? One hand. Any other hands? Two hands. Three hands. Four hands. Wait a minute. The United States says if you're a Christian, you're a terrorist. And Russia says Putin says what made Russia great is its Christianity. You know, that scares me. America and Russia have reversed roles. And forgive me, those of you who hate Russia. I pray for Russia. I also pray for the Ukraine. I pray for all Christians in all Christian countries. So now you have 200 million Turkic Muslims in the six former Soviet republics, the stands. Let's look at the European Union. European Union is 350 million people. America, 300 million. 307. Now, let's forgive me for saying it like this. I'm not saying this to be offending to God. I said, let's put God aside for a moment and let's think now like one world government economists. How many people here think that immigration is bad for America? Raise your hand. If you think immigration is bad for America, I see one hand, two hands, three hands. Okay. Economics is about numbers. If you have 150 million people like Russia, you're going to have the economy of 150 million people. If you have the economy of the United States of 300 million people, you're going to have a bigger economy. Now, Europe is 350 million people. Very soon, Turkey is planning to join the European Union. How many people know Turkey wants to join the European Union? Who supports that? President Obama. Now listen to this. I'm going to follow me through all the way to the end. 300 million Europeans who are not Muslims and 50 million Muslims. So you think 300 versus 50, not a big deal. Turkey joins the European Union, 70 million Turks from Anatolia, not a big deal. 70 million and 50 million, 120 million. So you still have 300 million non-Muslims, not a big deal. What's the problem? If you've been to Turkey, and if you've gone to the government offices or schools in Turkey, government buildings, and you look on the wall and you see the map of Turkey, it extends all the way from Morocco to China and from the Adriatic, meaning Albania, Bosnia, Kosovo, Macedonia, Greece, Bulgaria, Turkey, the Sixth Band, and all the way into Xinjiang province of China. All Turkey. It's all painted red with the Turkish flag. The Turks have aspirations to return to the great old days of the Ottoman Empire. Now, you know, if you're a Jew, or you make Aliyah, you have one Jewish grandparent, three non-Jewish grandparents. You're not a Jew. You move to Israel, you get an Israeli passport. I don't know if you know that. Immediately. So the Turks have the same deal with the Turkic Muslims of the former Soviet Union. 200 million Turkic former Soviet citizens may now move to Turkey and get Turkish passports. So you see, if Turkey joins the European Union, you're talking about 50 million Muslims in Europe, 70 million Anatolians, and 200 million Turkic Soviets. 320 million Muslims versus 300 million non-Muslims, Europe is now a Muslim continent. The moment Turkey joins the European Union, who supports it? Obama. Europe becomes a Muslim continent. Okay. Hello. I said forget about God, let's forget about God. You have 620 million people. Can America remain only 300 million people? No. America has to reach 620 million people too. How many people heard of NAFTA? Now, I'm not saying I support NAFTA. I'm just trying to explain to you how the economists think. What's NAFTA? NAFTA is Canada, Mexico, U.S. That's half a billion people, 500 million. Did you ever wonder why are these Central American children coming into the U.S.? Did you ever wonder why the U.S. is not putting up a fence along the Mexican border? And the answer is, you don't need a fence. Because Mexico, U.S., and Canada are going to join up as one country. It's going to be called the Amero. How many people know this theory? I'm not making it up. Now, why are the Central Americans coming in? Because the six republics of Central America, they're good people. They're Latinos. They're going to join Mexico. So you're going to go up from 500 million population to 520 million people, but the Europeans have 620 million. You're still short 100 million people. Where are you going to get 100 million people to equal in numbers the European Union? And that's 100 million Muslims from the Arab Spring. Okay, are you with me? How do you get 100 million Muslims into the U.S.? Very simple, the Arab Spring. The U.S. government supports the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood's plan is to annihilate the Christians. You annihilate the Christians, you destroy the economy. Again, we're not talking about God now. We're talking about economics. The Christians in Egypt are 10 million. The Muslims are 80 million. Get rid of the 10 million Coptic Christians, God forbid. You've destroyed the Egyptian economy. And then 80 million Egyptian Muslims starve to death. What happens when 80 million people starve? They leave. Where do they go? America. Okay. Now, you'll forgive me. I'm going to quote from the Bible. I'm going to show you how mentally unstable I am. Now, had I been here 4 years ago, remember the Arab Spring started in February 2011. If I had come here 4 years ago and I had quoted Isaiah 19, 1 and 2, how many people know Isaiah 19, 1 and 2? I see a few hands. Isaiah 19, 1 and 2, don't forget, Mubarak was still firmly in power in Egypt. He wasn't a Democrat. I mean, he was a dictator. He was a tyrant. He ruled Egypt for 30 years. But you had stability in Egypt. Isaiah 19, 1 and 2 says, Egyptian will fight Egyptian. Brother will fight brother. Neighbor will fight neighbor. And city will fight city. Does anyone remember these verses? So let me tell you a story. February 11th, 2011, this Tunisian fruit vendor is pushing his cart. And a policeman says, come over here. Where's my bribe? In other words, where's your license to push your cart? And this poor Tunisian guy said, I never had a license. You know me. Well, I want my bribe. He said, I'm not going to pay you a bribe. So he arrests him. And at the police station there in Tunisia, this little village, they confiscate his cart. They confiscate his fruit. They confiscate his scales, where he weighed the fruit. It's only property. And then a Muslim policewoman slaps him in the face. The greatest insult to a Muslim man. Eventually, they got to let him go. As soon as he leaves the police station, buys a liter, quart of gasoline. The gas station pours it all over himself. Self-immolates, he dies. And all the Tunisians are holding up their cell phones, videotaping this. Within minutes, all of Tunisia is up in flames. This was the beginning of the Arab Spring. Within minutes, all of Tunisia was, because they're under the French influence. Everybody has Facebook and everyone has Twitter, the social media. The Tunisians had had enough of this crummy, rotten, corrupt government in Tunisia, Ben Ali. The next day, Libya. How many people remember Gaddafi? 26 years, America wanted to get rid of Gaddafi. And America couldn't do it. The people got rid of him. The next day, Egypt. The next day, Yemen. The next day, Syria. The whole Middle East goes up in flames. This is called the Arab Spring. We are now living in a time of a Holocaust. There's a Holocaust of 15 million Christians in the Middle East today. Where are the churches? Forgive me for saying it, they ain't going to be raptured. The 15 million Christians are not being raptured. They're being beheaded. The daughters are being raped, kidnapped, forced to marry Muslim men. They're slaughtering the Christians. They're beheading, they're crucifying, they're killing. They're taking a sword, taking a little boy and cutting through the middle. You know how wonderful Allah is, how merciful, how compassionate Allah is. So am I mentally unstable when I quote Isaiah 19, 1 and 2? God's word. It didn't happen 4 years ago. It happened 3.5 years ago. And there's another chapter, Ezekiel 28, 29. It says, Egypt will become a desolation. It says no human and no animal will tread in Egypt for 40 years. 40 years. It doesn't say the Egyptians are going to die. It says they're going to be scattered to the four corners of the earth. Has that ever happened in history? It's never happened that Egypt empties out completely. In my opinion, it could be an earthquake because Egypt is earthquake prone. It says in the Bible that this desolation will be from Aswan. What's in Aswan? The dam all the way to Migdol on the Mediterranean. Now, if that dam goes, the Egyptians have about half an hour or an hour to run east or west away from the Nile River Valley up into the higher desert. You're going to have 80, 90 million starving and thirsting people in the desert. Can you send an airlift every day to feed 90 million people? How many people here heard of Agenda 21? Okay, now forgive me. You know, I don't mean to pick on people, but everyone says that these FEMA camps are for beheading Christians who oppose the government. And I think the FEMA camps are there to house these Egyptians when the United Nations says there's an international emergency. We have to airlift all these people out of the desert of Egypt. And America is the greatest country in the world. America is the richest country of the world. And the Saudis have promised to pay for 50 million homes. How many people think the U.S. dollar is going to collapse? How many people think the U.S. economy is going to collapse? Now, among all my sins, and my sins, God knows, very plentiful, one of my sins is I speak a lot to the tea parties. And I always start with that question. And I say to them, I do think eventually there could be an economic problem for America. I mean, you sell your soul to the devil, which is Islam, Allah. I have a 3-year jail sentence for saying it. I say it all the time. You sell your soul to the devil, the day's going to come that it's payday. Remember what I said before. My wife picked up a broadcast. Even if it takes 150 years, we're going to make America Muslim. How do you make America Muslim? You build houses for Muslims. You bring in 50 million, 100 million. You suppress Christianity. You suppress Judaism. I've been in churches where good Christian people, good folk, would come up to me and say, you know, if we keep our jobs and gas goes down to 250 a gallon, we vote Obama. Doesn't matter Obama or George W. Bush or Bill Clinton or Jimmy Carter. I mean, I think America has had some very crazy presidents. How can a country so great like America have such presidents? Democrat or Republican? You know, I just came back from Canada. I loved my time in Canada. It was really, I was preaching every night. But it was like vacation for me. I feel like I was in Switzerland or something, another country. I spend most of my time in Texas, Oklahoma. And, you know, when you drive northeast from Dallas and you go about across the Red River, you go like 20, 25 minutes into Oklahoma. Beautiful, beautiful land. Rolling hills, forests, lakes. You don't see one person. One person you don't see. It's empty. You could easily fit 10 million Muslims in that area. How many people heard of the Kayamishi Mountains in Oklahoma? That's to the east of 75. How many people heard of the Ozarks? You have room easily in this area for 20, 30 million Muslims. Texas is empty. Oklahoma is empty. Missouri is empty. Arkansas is empty. Louisiana is empty. There's room for everybody. And if you have 100 million more people in this country, your economy grows. And the Saudis are going to pay. Do you understand why the economy is going to grow? Your dollar is not going to collapse. Your economy is not going to collapse because you are owned by Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has a direct interest in keeping you afloat. And who else? China. China doesn't want you to go broke. I've heard of this BRIC. You know, the BRICS theory of Brazil, Russia, India, China. I don't accept it. Russia may want to bring America down, but Russia's 150 million people. America's going to be 620 million people with Mexico, Canada, Central America, and the Muslims. Okay. I want to go now. What I'm doing is I'm going to many, many different subjects and then sewing it all together like a quilt. I was born in New York in 1949. America was a Judeo-Christian country. 250 million Christians, 6 million Jews. Terrific Judeo-Christian country. I moved to Israel in 68. In 68, you had 100,000 Muslims in America. So still the Jews, 6 million. We were number two. Judeo-Christian country. President Obama was very correct in his inaugural address, when he said that today America is a Christian, Muslim, comma, Jewish, Hindu country. How many of you read his inaugural address? Go to the internet. Inaugural address, January 2009. Obama says America is a Christian, Muslim country. Isn't that wonderful? One nation under God and Satan? Okay. How did you get one nation under God and Satan? How did you get 30 million Muslims? So I'm going to take about 10-15 minutes to explain this to you. Firstly, America had one of its most genius presidents in 1979. His name was Jimmy Carter. I can't understand how such a great country could have a president like this. And, I mean, I lived in Israel since 1968. I went to Iran as a businessman in 1969. And I was in a hotel there. Half the people in the hotel were Israeli officers, and half the people in the hotel were Iranian officers, hosting the Israeli officers. Iran was a great friend of Israel. Iran was a great friend of America. Iran was the cornerstone of the Cold War with the Soviet Union. The Shah of Iran was a dictator. You cannot rule in Islamic countries unless you're a dictator. There is no democracy in Islam. You know, my wife picked up in Arabic, the Saudis were saying, you know, Americans are saying we're going to bring democracy to the Middle East. The Saudis were saying, over our dead bodies. Because democracy is a Judeo-Christian thing. We don't believe in democracy. We believe in Sharia law. We believe in Islam. And so Jimmy Carter says, I don't like the Shah of Iran because he's a dictator, and dictators are guilty of human rights violations. And there's this man of God in Paris, France. His name is Ayatollah Khomeini. And Ayatollah Khomeini, Jimmy Carter says, is a Democrat. He's going to bring all the people of Iran together, the women's groups and the socialist groups and democratic groups and labor unions, and overthrow this Shah, who's an evil dictator. And like Hitler, the first thing the Shah did when he came, the Ayatollah did when he came to power, he destroyed all the other groups. Jimmy Carter turned Iran from being America's number one ally in the Islamic world to being America's number one enemy. I can't understand how America has a stupid president. But of course, you know, they all serve the same God. Wasn't it George W. Bush who said that Islam is a religion of love? Islam is a religion of peace. And we all serve the same God. And you've got churches in America, I don't want to mention names. You've got Chrislam churches. How many people heard of Chrislam? Those are synagogues of Satan. Because if you're praying to Allah, you're praying to Satan. I got to tell you a joke. I can't control it anymore. What's the difference between neurotic people and psychotic people? How many people heard this joke before? One hand, two hands, three hands. Oh, my loyalist in the back, yes, from Port Orchard. I would mention your name, but I don't want the Muslims to come looking for you. And neurotic people dream about castles in the air. Psychotic people live in castles in the air. And psychiatrists collect the rent. Now I have to explain the joke. Now, Adolf Hitler was psychotic for many reasons. I'll give you only two. He thought he could conquer the earth, and he thought he could kill all the Jews. Can you conquer the earth? Can anyone conquer the earth? Anyone who thinks he can conquer the earth is stark, raving, mad, lunatic, psychotic. The Persians tried it, the Greeks tried it, the Romans tried it, the Mongols tried it, Napoleon, Hitler, Stalin. Nobody can conquer the earth. Only the Lord has dominion over the earth. Amen? Okay. That's psychosis number one. Psychosis number two, Hitler thought he could kill all the Jews. Can you kill all the Jews? Now, there are two types of human beings. There are believers and there are non-believers. Now, if you're a believer, you're a Jew or a Christian who believes in God, believes in the Bible. Now, if you believe in the Bible, you believe in Jeremiah 31:35, which says, there will be no more Jews on the face of the earth when the moon, the sun, and the stars stop shining. You know what that means? You better pray for the Jews. Because when the Jews go, the world goes. Okay, now, two-thirds of the human race, Hindus, Buddhists, Muslims, good people. They're all good people. But they don't believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, or the Bible. But the Hindus, the Buddhists, and the Muslims all know that the Jews have been scattered to the four corners of the earth. If you can't conquer the earth, psychosis number one, you can't kill all the Jews, psychosis number two. Make sense? Okay, what does Islam believe? Psychosis number one is going to conquer the earth. Psychosis number two is going to kill all the Jews. Now, unlike Hitler, psychosis number three, they're going to kill 2 billion Christians. Psychosis number four, they're going to kill 1 billion Hindus. Psychosis number five, they're going to kill 2 billion Buddhists, including the communist Chinese. Now, I recommend to the Muslims not to mess around with the communist Chinese. The communist Chinese know what to do. They don't have the ACLU. Psychosis number six is that 1/6 of the human race can kill 5/6 of the human race and get away with it. Psychosis number seven, after the 1/6 kills the 5/6, the 1/6, what does it do to each other? They kill each other. Sunnis kill Sunnis, which is what we see with ISIS. Shiites kill Shiites, and Sunnis and Shiites kill each other. Islam is the perfect depopulating system on the planet Earth. Why is Allah Satan? Because he wants to kill all of us, including the Muslims, because we're all in the image of God. For Satan to say he's greater than God, all those in the image of God have to be destroyed. This is perfectly understood if you know the theology here. And of course, psychosis number eight, when you die for Allah, you get 72 virgins. I can't manage with Rachel. I don't know how they marry four. 72 virgins would be hell. So this leads to one more joke, and I'll get back to serious business. Osama bin Laden dies for Allah. Beam me up, Scotty. He's up in heaven waiting for 72 virgins. Who shows up? George Washington. George Washington beats him up. Patrick Henry, give me liberty or give me death, beats him up. President Adams beats him up. And the whole line forms of 72 tall, strapping, you know, six-footers to beat him up. He goes, wait a second, we've got all eternity for this. I'm going to Allah's office to protest. Goes to Allah's office. You promised me 72 virgins. No, silly, you weren't listening. I said 72 virginians. I got a 3-year jail sentence in Switzerland because I told this joke every night in Switzerland. And I said, Allah is Satan. And Islam is not a religion. Islam is a criminal psychosis. And I'm saying it now. And I want to say one more thing. I love the Muslims. Listen carefully. I love the Muslims. When the Allies defeated Nazi Germany in 1945, did the Americans wipe out Germany? Americans did what Jesus said. Bless the enemy. Marshall Plan, rebuild Europe, rebuild Germany. Today, Germany is your best friend. The Germans could only have a life when they had democracy rammed down their throats by the Americans, the British, and the French. I want the same for the Muslims. And I don't care what the Saudis say over our dead bodies. They're going to have democracy because we cannot tolerate Islam on the face of the earth. And I have a half hour left. I'm going to get very soon to the bottom line, how this is going to happen. Because Islam is so crazy, so psychotic, that in the end, even the harlot is going to dismount the dragon and kill the dragon. The harlot, one world government. So let's talk a little bit about how the Muslims come into this country. When Jimmy Carter brings down the Shah, you have to remember, 9 million Iranians had to flee Iran or be beheaded. Does anyone remember this from the late 70s, early 80s? 9 million Iranian Shiites, good people. They were your allies. They were Israel's allies. They had to get out of Iran and flee to the United States or be beheaded by Khomeini. Did America do the right thing to give them asylum? The answer is yes. Because they were your allies. The American president was so stupid that he turned Iran into enemy number one. In gratitude, the first thing Khomeini did was to take the American embassy captive for 444 days. So now if you have 9 million Shiite Iranians in the United States, 9 million and 6 million Jews, who's number two now in America? The Iranians. Okay. So you got 9 million Iranians. The Arab Sunni Immigrant Association claims at least 7 million members. This is a few years ago. It's a lot more now. How much is 7 million and 9 million? 16 million. How many people heard of Louis Farrakhan, Nation of Islam? 4 million. That's 20 million. We haven't even begun to discuss the Muslims from Bosnia, Albania, Turkey, Somalia, Indonesia, India, Africa, Chechens from Russia. How many people remember the Tsarnaev brothers in Boston? The bombing of the Marathon bombing. The Russian government warned the U.S. these guys are terrorists. But Homeland Security is so riddled with Muslims now, it's like putting foxes in the hen house to guard. Okay. Let me tell you a few testimonies. As I said, I spend a lot of time in Texas. Sometimes I drive in, sometimes I fly in. Once I flew into Dallas-Fort Worth, rented a car, finished my 2 weeks there, returned the car to Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, and I returned the car to the rent-a-car company, and the young man who receives the car is an Indonesian Muslim. Handsome, very nice man. And I'm in a rush to catch my plane, and very friendly guy. He says, he yells out at me, "America's the greatest country on earth!" So I stopped and turned around and said, "Yes, I know. Why do you think America's the greatest country on earth?" He said, "Well, I used to be like a UPS, FedEx delivery boy in Indonesia. And once I was delivering packages to the American embassy. And an American embassy official pointed his finger at me and said, 'Hey, you, do you want to go to America? There's a plane leaving tomorrow. Bring your parents. Bring your siblings. Bring your cousins and your friends. Let's fill up the plane. It's paid for. I don't have a passport.' 'No passport needed, no visa needed. We will process you in the United States.' Isn't America the greatest country on earth?" That's how he came to the U.S. I've got three girlfriends. They're 75 years old. They work for trucking companies there in Joplin, in Missouri.
Missouri.
And if you've ever been on mile marker number 4, when you're going in from Oklahoma, you got these four big truck stops to gas stations, and they're there every day with their truckers. And every day, two buses arrive from Mexico carrying Muslims. They drive in across Texas, Oklahoma. They stop at mile marker number 4. They have a break, and then they continue to the northern states. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Maine. Who's accountable for this? Who's responsible for this? Who made the decision to bring in these Muslims? Is there anyone who got the email that I got a few months ago of a charter pilot who quit the charter company working on contract for the U.S. government? They're illegally flying Muslims into the country every day. I'm not making this up. The plane doesn't go to the terminal. The plane goes to the end of the runway. There are buses there. And each Muslim descends from the, disembarks from the plane. They give them $3,000, put them on buses, and send them to the north. I want to know who's responsible for this. This has been going on for decades. Let me tell you another way they bring Muslims into the country. Duke University, this is in my book, Christian Revival for Israel's Survival, 1999. It's about Duke University in High Point, North Carolina, not High Point, in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. They get, in those days, it was a telex, you know, or a cablegram or a phone call from some sultan in Brunei or something. He says, "I'm coming to present you with a gift. No strings attached, $23 million. Now, Duke University, you're going to say, "No, we don't want the money." So this guy shows up. They make a big party for him. And in his dedication speech, he says, "Here's $23 million. We Muslims have a great respect for Duke University. And we're going to give you another check for $23 million if you establish an Arabic language chair and an Islamic studies chair." What is the university going to say? Now it's $46 million. "And we know that you Americans don't know anything about Islam. We're going to help you. We're going to give you professors." What are Muslim professors? Missionaries. "And we know you Americans are challenged by different alphabets and different languages, and we're going to help you. We're going to send you tutors, 500 young male students every year. And they're going to pay full room, board, and tuition." Do you know what full room, board, and tuition is in a college? That's a lot of money. Let's say by the end of the day, we're talking about a $100 million budget. After 4 years, you're talking about 2,000 young male Muslim students. 500 freshmen, 500 sophomores, 500 juniors, 500 seniors. Not girls, boys. Because you see, Muslim boys can marry Christian or Jewish or atheist girls. Muslim girls are not allowed to marry non-Muslim men because they'll be killed. Or unless it's under orders. I won't mention names. Sometimes Muslim women do marry high-level Americans. Okay, won't say anymore. They have funny names. Anyway, I want to ask you a question. When a Muslim man marries a Christian or Jewish woman, what's the religion of the children? Muslim. In other words, the plan is to overwhelm America with young male Muslim students and turn American non-Muslim women into Muslim baby factories. Now, when they marry American women, after 2 years, what happens? Passports. After they get passports, they can bring in their parents and brothers and sisters and cousins and uncles and aunts and friends. All you have to do is post bond that they won't be a burden on the U.S. economy. So the growth now is not arithmetic. The growth is now geometric. So I ask you a question. Do they have $100 million for Duke University? Do they have $1 billion for 10 universities? Do they have $100 billion for 1,000 universities? 1,000 universities times 500 student visas a year. This is not immigrants. This is student visas. Talk about 500,000 Muslims a year coming into the U.S. Give them a few decades. They're going to be 50 million, 100 million. Want another story? These are all stories. I collect them as I travel. One of the first churches I ever spoke in, 1992, was in Brownsville, Texas. Central Christian Church. Pastor Melvin Newland. It's been 22 years, I still remember his name. And this beautiful blonde, blue-eyed girl comes up to me and says, I got to tell you a story. She was 18. I'm studying to be a veterinary doctor at the University of Texas in Austin. And, you know, if you're going to be a vet in Texas, you have to have a plane. Because vets have to fly. Texas is a big state. You've got to fly around the state. So she was in a flying school. She meets the Saudi prince. Do you know what the first words of the Saudi prince were when he saw her? Will you marry me? Never spoke to him. He never spoke to her. The first words, will you marry me? So she said, listen, you know, I'm 18 and I'm still young. And I've been driving a car since I was 16. And I'm learning to fly. And in Saudi Arabia, I can't drive a car and I can't fly a plane. Oh, you wouldn't have to. We have a chauffeur in a limousine. And we have first-class jet aircraft. You wouldn't have to fly. He said, well, I love cows and pigs and donkeys and dogs and cats. I want to be a vet. 1997, 5 years later, I'm back in the same church. And this girl comes up to me again. Oh, I got some more stories for you. Now I'm a doctor, she said. But I'm still studying one or two things to complete my thesis. And I go to the cafeteria. It's full of Muslim boys. And one guy comes up to me and says, will you marry me? She says, well, you know, I'm a vet. I drive a car. I fly a plane. Oh, you don't want to marry me? You see that guy over there, my friend? He'll marry you. Oh, you don't want to marry him? That guy, he'll marry you. These guys come with a budget to buy gold and silver and diamonds, to woo and to court and to marry American women, to make them Muslim baby-producing factories, and to get passports. Do you understand why the Saudis were wrong when they said it's going to take 150 years, it's only going to take 30 years to make America Muslim? And it's all sugar-coated with money, money, money. And American Christian girls and American Jewish girls and American atheist girls are naive, don't have a clue. And these Muslim men, they are trained to do this. And everything is just wonderful until they get married. Okay. These are just simple little things I wanted to share with you. I'm watching the clock because I've got to start wrapping up pretty soon. Two little things I wanted to share with you. I spoke in Laredo, Texas. Laredo, Texas, United Baptist Church, Pastor Barrera, And they have an English language service, and they have a Spanish language service. And I spoke in English, and I spoke in Spanish. Wonderful people. Then we went out to eat, and said, we have a story for you. One day we came to church Sunday morning, 8 in the morning, and we found a woman prostrate on the carpet praying. She was wet from the waist down. She had just waded across the Rio Grande River. So we spoke to her in Spanish. She was olive-colored skin, like Mexican. She didn't speak Spanish. She was Iranian. What happened? She was a Muslim. She came to the Lord, praise God. When her family found out after she became a believer, they wanted to kill her. Luckily for her, she wasn't married. She came from a rich family. She had a passport. She had money. She bought a ticket to Paris, France. She flew to Paris. She got to Paris. She bought another ticket to Mexico City. Flew to Mexico City. Got off the plane. She hired a taxi driver, a coyote. How many people know what a coyote is? Coyote. These are the immigrants runners. And the Mexican taxi driver drove her to the Nuevo Laredo on the border, on the Rio Grande, 16-hour drive from Mexico City. Got there like 2, 3 in the morning. Said to the Iranian woman, there's the Rio Grande. You slide down the embankment. You wade across. It's up to your waist. You go up the embankment. You're home. She walked a few blocks on I-35. The door was open in the church. Sometimes people forget to lock the door. She went in to thank the Lord for salvation, for deliverance. And so they said to her, you can't just come into the United States like this. You have to surrender to the authorities. We'll vouch for you. They vouched for her. The happy end of the story. She got asylum. Now, if a single woman can just do that, what would you say about terrorists coming across from Mexico? I'm going to ask you a rhetorical, I won't say hypothetical, it's not hypothetical. I'm going to ask you a rhetorical question. Do you think or do you not think that they have tunnels under the border between Mexico and the United States? And I have news for you. I just came down from Florida. I'm already planning December, January, February. I just came down from Canada. And how many people know the road from Vancouver to Abbotsford? Skirts along the border. Do you know that there's no fence? You can walk across. There's no fence. And one of the ladies there in Canada said, oh, yes, we found a house on the Canadian side and a house on the American side, and there was a tunnel for smuggling drugs. Now, you tell me what's the difference between smuggling drugs and smuggling anti-aircraft missiles or nuclear weapons, backpacks. Okay. Now, I'm going in for the final home stretch. I say there are two types of Islam. There's revolutionary and there's evolutionary. What I have described until now is the evolutionary. What they call the moderates. Is there such a thing as a moderate Muslim? Is there such a thing as a moderate Nazi? Is there such a thing as a moderate communist? Is there anything as a moderate Tojo fascist? There is no such thing as a moderate Muslim. You have revolutionary, evolutionary. The evolutionaries say, we do not want to destroy America. We want to buy it out and glorify Allah by buying out America and making it Muslim. We don't have to kill them yet. We will make them Muslim. And so I have described the plan of the moderates to do this. What I want to do now is I want to talk about the revolutionaries. Now, revolutionaries, I've got Sleeping in America and Legacy of Hate on the back table. I have a few things on the back table there, which we'll talk about, 9/11. How many people know Oklahoma City was a Saddam Hussein bomb? This is in my first and third books. Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols either converted to Islam or they were working how many people heard of Ramzi Youssef? Ramzi Youssef built the bomb in New York City in 1993. He went to the Philippines and he organized the Abu Sayyaf terrorist group. Terry Nichols trained in the Philippines with Ramzi Youssef. Need I say more? I was in Oklahoma City. I was in Tulsa when the bomb went off. This was not a Christian, Waco, crazy militia bomb. Clinton said it was crazy Waco militiamen. The Christians got the bum rap from Bill Clinton. This was an Islamic bomb. Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were behind it. Terry Nichols and Timothy McVeigh were part of it. It's fanatic Islamic global threat in the red book, The Islamic Threat Updates. Everything is documented. TW-800, how many people think the plane just went down because of a fuel injection explosion? There were hundreds of people on the ground who saw the missile. How many people remember the name Pierre Salinger? Pierre Salinger interviewed the Air France captain who dodged the missile, evaded the missile, and then the missile went on to the next heat-emitting plane called TW-800. Saddam Hussein, the day before, said, tomorrow's Iraq's Independence Day, we're going to give the United States a big surprise. This thing was planned by Saddam Hussein. I would need an hour to explain it. You know, the Shiites, backed by Iran, say that if America supports the Sunnis against Bashar al-Assad, the Shiites are going to launch sleeper attacks on American soil. The Sunnis say if America supports Iran and the Shiites, the Sunnis are going to launch sleeper cell attacks on American soil. How many people shut down the U.S. on 9/11? 19! You got 30 million Muslims in America. Soon you're going to have another 10, 20, 50 million Muslims coming in as these Islamic countries all collapse. The Muslims are going to be starving. The Middle East is depopulating itself. Is it the Jews who are doing it? Is it the Christians who are doing it? It's Allah. Remember Sarah Palin? That Allah sorted out. Sarah Palin said that Allah sorted out. Muslims are killing each other. You're going to be getting tens of millions of Muslims. Canada knows it's going to get at least 10 million Muslims. Brazil is going to get, Mexico is going to get, Argentina is going to get. These are all countries full of natural resources and they need population. America will have 620 million people like Europe. The King of Saudi Arabia, or the Kings of Saudi Arabia, believe that America can be taken over with money. And they're going to build millions of homes, tens of millions of homes for Muslims. When you have a building boom, the whole economy takes off. The dollar will be stronger than ever. The U.S. economy will be stronger than ever thanks to the Saudi money. That's the plan. What's the thorn in the side of the Saudis? What's the stick in the mud? ISIS. Now, you see, if you grew up in Saudi Arabia, if you're a male, and you go to the Wahhabi school system. Jihad. You know, jihad is a word from Texas. Jihad. And you graduate high school in Saudi, and they give you a stipend. They give you a bunch of money. They say, go away. Go to Afghanistan. Go to Pakistan. Go to Syria. Go to Iraq. Go to Lebanon. Go wage jihad. And so a lot of these guys go off to war for Allah. 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. You know, after a while, people get tired. You know, it's called veterans. And these jihad veterans come back to Saudi Arabia. And what do they see? They see the hypocrisy of the king of Saudi Arabia and his family. They control all the money. You have 40% unemployment in Saudi Arabia. 40% unemployment. They have a very high suicide rate. Things are not going right in Saudi Arabia. They have like 19 million population, and they have 2 million Hindus and Catholics from the Philippines. Hindus are pagans. Catholics are infidels. Contaminating the holy soil of Islam. And so the Shiites and also the ISIS people say to the king of Saudi Arabia, you know, you have to be beheaded. The king of Jordan has to be beheaded. The king of Saudi Arabia has to be beheaded. The royal families have to be beheaded. You know why? Three reasons. Reason number one, these Saudis have so much money and they go off to Europe, America, sometimes used to be Egypt, for gambling, drinking, and prostitution. You know, cannot get it at home. Then they come back to Saudi Arabia to put on their holy garments and all of a sudden they're holy rollers again. It's hypocrites. The Shiites are poor, pure, and Puritan, and so are the ISIS. Secondly, get rid of the slaves. Get rid of the Hindus, the 1 million Hindus, the 1 million Catholics. They contaminate the holy soil of Islam, of Mecca and Medina. Because the country is 20 million, they have 2 million slaves taking care of them. And here comes the crunch. The real reason the king of Saudi Arabia has to die and his family has to die, according to the ISIS and the Shiites, is because they are collaborators with Christianity. Now you see, what is the oxygen of the one world government economy? Oil. 2 weeks without oil, you cannot produce plastic. No plastic, no economy. The world basically has 2 weeks of reserves. Now, you know, God willing, very soon America will have the Keystone pipeline. Canada, U.S. will be totally self-sufficient. But you've got countries like China, India, Japan, many parts of Europe that are totally dependent on imports. And the price of oil is decided not by what U.S. needs or Canada needs. It's decided by what the world needs. It's global village. And ISIS and the Shiites are saying that Saudi Arabia is perpetuating the Christian hegemony over Islam. And that the way to destroy Christianity, you have to destroy the economy. How do you destroy the Christian economy? You deny them the oil. So the logic of the Shiites of Iran, the logic of these ISIS, is to destroy the Saudi kingdom, destroy the collaborators with the West, destroy the oil wells. When you destroy the oil wells, you destroy the world economy. What happens when you destroy the world economy? How many people heard of David Wilkerson? Cities going up in flames. We just saw a sign just over an unfortunate incident in Missouri. Think for a moment how many billions of people will die of starvation, sickness, and chaos when the oil stops flowing. This is the perfect plan of the devil to kill human beings. I'm going to ask you another question. How many people think that there is a plan to depopulate the world by the one world government? Okay, now I disagree with that. Why do I disagree with it? Because the one world government, their god is mammon. Are you going to make more mammon or less mammon if you destroy the population of the earth? Destroying the population of the earth is one of the tree hugger's greatest ideas. Don't destroy the trees, destroy the people. But the one world government mammon people, they want more and more people to make more and more money. It's all about money. So I believe that the day is going to come that ISIS will attack and take over Jordan. And ISIS will attack and take over Saudi Arabia. And we're going to see the oil wells getting blown up unless the one world government says enough. As long as Islam participates in the one world government economy, which is the plan of the Saudi king, it's okay to have Muslims, Islam tolerated. But when ISIS and the Shiites start blowing up the oil wells, no way, Jose. The harlot will dismount from the dragon and slaughter the dragon. Otherwise, the dragon will kill the harlot. That's the way I see it. I have 5 minutes, and I'm going to conclude with something which I want you all to think about. You know, the Six-Day War. How many people know that one of the names of Allah is Al-Makr? Al-Makr means Allah is the greatest of all the liars and deceivers. Ask any Muslim. Al-Makr. Wow, you're smart. How did you know that? You see, because in the Middle East, it's a virtue to lie. How many people heard of taqiyya? Taqiyya means you are commanded to lie to the infidel. Lying is a good thing in Islam. Because Allah is the greatest of all the liars and deceivers. Six-Day War. Allah promised the victory to the Muslims. Who won the war? The Jews. So the Muslims in Israel and the Arab world said, you know what? We got to get rid of this liar God, Allah, and go over to the God of truth, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who's the God of the Jews and the Christians. Who ruined it all? Moshe Dayan. Moshe Dayan comes with the keys to the Temple Mount. Let's make peace. Now, Moshe Dayan, I'm not going to criticize him. Moshe Dayan understood realities. We had miracles in the Six-Day War. And we were outnumbered 100-1 by the end of the war. It was so fast that Muslims didn't know what happened to them. Outnumbered 100-1. What does Jesus say? Who is the king who goes to war with 10,000 men against the king with 20,000 men? How many people know that verse in the Bible? Not too many hands go up. But it goes together with the other parable. Who is the man who builds a tower without first counting the cost? How many people know that one? Less people say he started to build it and he couldn't finish. So the parable, which is parallel, is who is the king with 10,000 who goes to war against the king with 20,000? Maybe better to send an ambassador of peace. This is what Dion did. What did Winston Churchill say? He said magnanimous in victory. Israel's trying to be magnanimous in victory. We extended the olive branch. We won fair and square. Let's make peace. You know how the Muslims understood it? Aha! Allah is the greatest of all the liars and deceivers because he even deceived Moshe Dayan. We're sticking with Allah. That's the Muslim mentality. And so I'm predicting. And don't try to get out of my mouth that I'm saying that I want to blow up the black stone in Mecca, you know, the Kaaba. ISIS said they're going to do it. How many people heard ISIS said they're going to blow up the black stone in Mecca? Because the black stone is a pagan symbol. And Muhammad co-opted the pagan symbol into Islam. ISIS are purists. They want to get rid of the black stone. But you get rid of the black stone, you get rid of Islam. Because the Muslims go around the black stone 7 times as part of the Hajj. When the black stone goes, Islam goes, because it's the end of Islam. It's one of the 5 pillars of Islam. And I'm predicting the day's going to come, one way or another, that black stone is going to be destroyed. Islam is going to be defeated. And if you ask me when, I'd say tomorrow. Because ISIS could take over Saudi Arabia at any time. We have a professor in Israel, Amasya Baram. They were asking him, what happens if ISIS takes over Jordan? He says Israel has a problem because most of the Jordanians support ISIS. Most of the Saudis support ISIS because they all know the king and his family are corrupt. ISIS are purists. ISIS is a popular movement among the Sunnis. And like I said, when they start blowing up the oil wells to harm the Christians, they're cutting off their own nose to spite their faces. And the one world government is not going to tolerate it. And so I believe Islam will be terminated by, not by the Jews and the Christians, Islam will be terminated by the harlot, by the one world government. Then they'll come to the Jews, after it's all done, now you can build your temple. If you get the gist. Wait a second, if you're talking about Christian theology, once you have a temple, what do you have after that? The Antichrist. And if you ask me, when is that going to be? It won't be tomorrow, but it'll be the day after tomorrow. We are living in the most remarkable times. Messiah is really, really around the corner. And I will conclude with number 6 in Hebrew and in English. Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmerechecha. May the Lord bless thee and keep thee. Ya'eher Adonai panahav elecha. May the Lord cause his countenance to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. Isaha Adonai Panahav Elecha Fiyasehem Lecha Shalom. Amen. And may the Lord turn his face unto thee and grant thee peace. Amen.